And sit up as tall as you can. And feel all the worries and cares falling away. And settle into right now, to feeling that I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be right now. There's nothing I need to chase in the future or from the past. I can just be in the present moment, happy with that. So withdrawing your awareness from everything around you and landing in the solid body, physical form. Start to scan your awareness down your body, starting with the crown of the head and moving down slowly. As you're scanning your awareness, tension is releasing at each point you come to. When you reach the end of the downward scanning, start to scan back up the body. And it's a good place to start to develop the skill, if you don't have it already, to not be drawn to every sound around you. At a certain point, it's almost as though you don't hear it, although you still can. But just planting the seeds to have the new habit of deciding where your attention goes and letting it stay there. It's as though we lose interest. You know, what this person's saying in the hall, not so interesting. I choose to be with my awareness. I choose to be in my meditation. When you reach the crown of your head, bring your awareness to your breath. Wherever you feel your breath moving in your physical form the most. Most likely at your chest. Keeping your awareness on the rise and fall of your chest, if that's where you're focusing, as you inhale and exhale. If you're at the chest and want to move to a more subtle breath, finding the breath at the tip of the nose and what it feels like with each inhale and exhale. If you're focusing at the tip of the nose and you're tension starts to feel tight or too constricted, then go back to the breath at the chest. wherever you're focusing, focus really brightly for the last few moments. The end of our meditation is what we'll remember when we begin our next meditation. At the end of each meditation, think, awesome, good job. This is exactly where I want to be, what I want to be doing. And relax your focus, filling your whole body. Reaching your awareness out to the space around you. When you're ready, starting to move, you can open your eyes, make a dedication if you like. Like we've done more than two classes. This is the third class. It seems like we've done more. Okay. So, this is the third class of Karma Creating Your Future, and it's Wednesday, April 12th, 2017. Tonight we're going to talk about three kinds of karma and four kinds of good karma. And then we'll start with a little bit of review. Who remembers what school we're studying in this course? Detailist or Vaibhashika. So it's a part of Hinayana or Theravadin. And I was listening to Gelug Rinpoche recently, who's my parents' teacher, and he recently passed away, sadly enough, but he taught for many years, he wrote many books. He had centers all over the world. And the way he described, so Hinayana is the lower vehicle, you could say vehicle, you could say lower scope. And then Mahayana, which is what we study, is greater scope. And the way he described it was, which I knew but I hadn't heard it described this way, was that in the lower scope, the point is to get out of suffering for yourself. And that, so you could call it lower or smaller. Just by the fact that it's for yourself, it's smaller. Not like it's, because lower implies it's not as good or something like that. And I mean, in one way, you could say that, but that's not what is meant necessarily. And then greater scope, we're trying to get out of suffering and reach full enlightenment for the benefit of all beings. So it's a wider or greater scope. And I'd never heard it described like that, and that makes a lot of sense to me. You'll probably hear it, you'll hear it different ways too. Okay, and then the main book for the study of Abhidharma is what?
Abhidharma Kosha?
Written by? starts with a V.
I know, I'm going to miss my Batsu.
Close.
Oh, yeah.
Vasubandhu.
Yep, okay. Master Vasubandhu. And the commentary we're using is Tarlam Selje. It's Illumination of the Path to Freedom by the First Dalai Lama. And his name in Tibetan was Gyalwa Gendin Drup. I like his name. So last week we talked about the opening line of the Abhidharma Kosha, which was say Lele Jikten
Nasok
Ki. Does anyone remember what that means?
About the cause for your future, or isn't that? I know
causes
in there.
Yeah, we were talking about. So we talked about what aren't the causes for things happening, mm-hmm. which were like a creator being. It's not that there's no cause. We talked about the energy, or how did we put it? Yeah, I guess energy is the best way to say it. Mm-hmm. Anyways, so we talked about the ways that the world doesn't exist, but the opening line of the fourth chapter says, karmic deeds cause the multitude of worlds. And then he goes on to say, not these things, which Hindus in that time, and a lot of us in our time, believe do cause the world. Does anyone remember the definition of karma? Mm-hmm. Karma is movement of the mind and what follows. So movement of the mind is mental karma, and what follows includes speech and deeds. And then tonight we're going to talk about virtue and non-virtue. What makes a virtue? What makes a non-virtue? Gewa means a good deed, and that's the Tibetan for virtue. So basically, virtue is the same as good deed, but in our culture, I think virtue has more of a judgment attached to it. Not that good deed doesn't, but virtue kind of means like, oh, you're a good person or something. It has more judgment in it for me. Does anyone else feel like that? As opposed to good deed seems much more clear.
But it seems like something you do versus something you are.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true too. All right. Okay, so first off, we're going to talk about three kinds of karma. And this is the first kind, which you can probably guess from the picture, but
I thought that picture was a horse.
Well, maybe you can't. How is that a horse? I'm trying to squint.
I thought that was her hair. I saw the hair first. I thought it was a mane.
I can see the hair being
a
mane.
And then, like, her arm coming out, I thought it was the nose. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Like, just kind of
like if you glance.
Actually.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I see. Okay.
Now I see a person.
Okay. Say du reishi.
Du reishi.
La namen.
La namen.
Yidu.
Yidu.
Ongwa.
Ongwa.
Dewa.
Dewa.
Nongwa.
Nongwa.
Dang.
Dang.
Okay, so this is all one sentence, but we're breaking it up into two. In the short term is karma. Oh, wait, let me see. Let me make sure I'm doing this correctly. In the short term.
Are we translating?
Yes.
Is it to experience happiness in the short term and receive a desirable karmic result after time? Something like that?
Yes, that part is. That's really close. And then say tendu.
Tendu.
Duk nyao.
Duk nyao.
Le kyopa.
Le kyopa.
Nyangde.
Nyangde.
Topje.
Topje.
Gewa.
Gewa.
Okay. And then this is the second half of it. So what I was trying to figure out is how it was split up with the particular words, because I put those dashes in there. Oh, to separate. That's what it is. So du, re, shi, la is in the short term. And then namin is karmic result after time. Then yidu, ongwa is desirable. Dewa is happiness. And nongwa, dang is to experience. That's how it was split up. And then at the bottom, tendu is ultimate. Duknyel is suffering. Le is from. Kyopa, to protect. Nyangde, nirvana. And topje, gewa, it brings you. You want to give a try on the whole thing?
So it brings you nirvana and protects you from ultimate suffering. And experience happiness in the short term. Karmic results. Desirable. Something like that.
Yes. So the translation is a good deed or virtue is something which in the short term brings you a pleasurable experience, aka a desirable karma effect or result, and which ultimately protects you from suffering by bringing you to nirvana. Which is really cool, because there's not really any judgment. This is saying a good deed is something that brings you a pleasurable experience. It's not saying this deed is good, you do this. This deed is bad, you do that. It's more, we'll get into this more, but it's more based on the intention of the deeds that we do. Which, in a way, also makes it more confusing. Because if it was that clear cut, do this, don't do this, do this, don't do this, then it'd be a lot easier, but we're in charge a lot more, so it's more personal responsibility. And that's what they say happens when we become a Buddha. We know what to give up and we know what to take up, which would be really, really cool. Always knowing what to do, always knowing what not to do. There's no deciding, there's no, oh, should I do this? Should I go get Pushkin's donuts on Sunday morning again, or should I not? They're so good. Have you had them? They only make them Sunday mornings.
No.
There's like a line out the door when they open. They're amazing. So there's none of that. There wouldn't be any of that deciding. Like, should I move here or should I move there? Do I date this person? Do I date that person? Do I take this job or that one? Do I talk to this person? Do I not? Think of how much time that would free up, too. We spend so much time trying to figure out what to do. At least I do. So, okay. Namin. Which is that's good. Which is this up there, like the fourth word. That means is a result after time. What is that implying?
That
it doesn't happen when.
Right away.
Yeah. So we get the result after time, which can be a problem because we do a deed in the present. We give something to someone that we think they're really going to like. And then it turns out that they hate it. And you hear people saying before they've studied karma, but you hear, and maybe ourselves too, well, that's what I get. I'm not giving anything to them anymore. Which, if the result comes after time, then that person not liking the gift wasn't from the gift being given. The gift being given, we're going to assume it was a good intention. Like, oh, I think this person's really going to like this gift. And then you give it to them and they complain about it and they don't like it. And then you think, oh, I shouldn't have given them this. But that's not the case at all. That deed is planting a seed for the future that's going to come back. Just like a plant, like a literal plant, a rose bush, you plant the seed. You get roses way later. And you don't expect them right away. We get it a lot with planting literal seeds because it's a lot more obvious.
But you said, like, even your thoughts can be either good or bad karma.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you can't help your thoughts, really.
Well, you mean some thoughts come up and you feel like they're coming out of nowhere and you can't stop them type thing?
Yeah.
I'd say that once we start meditating more, and this is my experience. You might have this experience in a different way, or you guys might too. There's a way where we can see that actually the thought's coming up and we have the choice to follow it or not. So as that thought's coming up, like maybe it's a negative thought, as we practice more and more, if we can start to create a separation between the thought and my reaction to it, which is a lot of what meditation does for the mind, then we can see, okay, this is coming up, but that's not the same as me latching onto it and like pushing it along and thinking about it more and then planting new karmic seeds. So those things that are coming up, like a thought or maybe an anger, some sort of emotion, that's a past ripening. And then we're planting a new seed by what we're doing in the present. And I think it is a confusing thing to start to notice. And the only way I think I've been able to notice, and it's not all the time, is from my meditation practice. That's my experience. Other people might be able to do it just by paying attention more. For me, it took more meditating. But you're right. Like, those thoughts that pop up, sometimes I have some wild, crazy thoughts. And I think, oh my God, where did that come from? Or like some terrible thoughts. So in that sense, they're coming from the past.
Is that karmic seed being planted by you thinking that?
No, because there's a difference between like the thought coming up and then me actively thinking about it in the present. Just like the person being unhappy with what I give them with the gift. That's something from the past. That's a past seed that I planted that's ripening now. And my planting a seed for the future is the giving of the gift. With a thought coming up, my planting more seeds is actively starting to think about that again. Or some angry thought comes up and I go off with it. Like, yeah, that's right. I cannot believe that person did that to me. And blah, 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 blah. That would be planting more seeds. And that's why, that's why it's said that karma is deeply hidden, because it can be very confusing. Does that make sense?
Kind of.
We'll be talking about it more. I think it'll start to make more sense. Do you have something to say?
No, I was just thinking, with your example, you give a gift and they don't appreciate it, so then the feeling that might come up or the thought that comes up would be frustration of, you know, feeling like I didn't do well enough. But if, you know, okay, notice it's frustration, that's one thing, but to then say, oh, well, I'm so frustrated, I'm never going to give them another gift, then that is carrying on the deed.
Mm-hmm.
The
okay. Yep, and it's just like with any of these, the easiest way to think about it for me is in literal gardening. Like, the thought that comes up or the feeling that comes up, that's the roses coming up. And I can choose to plant more rose bushes in the present, or I can plant some weeds or something, you know? Like, things that are coming up have already been planted in the past. And then whatever I'm doing in the present is planting more. I don't know if that clears it up, but we'll get there. So, and that's the unfortunate thing about karma, is that it takes time to ripen, because if it ripened right away, there would be no confusion. If every time we killed a mosquito, one of our ribs broke, we would never, well, we'd maybe do it one more time or two more times and then think, oh, wait a minute, this is happening when I'm killing this bug or this mosquito, and then we would never do it again. But the way it works, that's the unfortunate thing about it, is that there's a time gap, just as there is when we're planting a garden. We plant the seeds, and then they ripen later. And that's something that we just need to, once we start working with karma more and watching how things come up more, it becomes evident that that's how it's working. And then, so right now we're just talking about it intellectually. And then each of us, if we haven't already, will start to see it in our lives more. And that's where it makes more sense. But it's important to get the intellectual part so that we understand what the idea is. And then we go out and we play around with it ourselves. And we see, okay, this is what the Buddha taught. This is what we talked about in class. Is this how it's working in my life? Do I see it happening in that same way? So that's where, I guess, the rubber hits the road. So by smashing the bug, our ribs will break, but it'll be later. Just like the picture of the boomerang in the first slide. You throw it out, and then it comes back. I like how Ami described it one time. She said it's like you throw a brick up in the air, and then it comes down and hits you in the head, and you're like, where did that come from? Who put that there? Why is it there? What's happening? That's like every single thing that happens in our lives is like that. It's something that we put there, but by the time it ripens, we're like, where the hell did this come from? Because in a way, we don't know exactly where it came from. But we usually don't think, oh, this is from some deed that I did in the past. Which clears up a lot of misunderstandings in the present if we start to think that way. And when we start to look at karma this way, what do we have to lose trying it out? If we haven't already proved it to ourselves, what we're doing now isn't working. Like, we're still having the things that we don't want still are coming to us. The things we want are still leaving us. So we might as well try something different and see how it works out. Okay. And then I love this one. Some of these are kind of comical. There's three times that you'll see a karmic seed ripen. Plant a seed, there's three times it can ripen. So one is you'll see it ripen in this life. The next is you'll see it ripen in the next life. That's the second. The third is anytime after that. So it's either this life, the next life, or any time after that. And we'll talk about how to supercharge the seeds that we plant so that they will ripen sooner. But that's the general idea. That's the idea, the basis of the secret teachings or the tantric teachings, is the idea that you supercharge the seeds so they ripen in this life, so that we'll see some incredible results in this life before we die, so that we can reach full enlightenment in this life. So there are ways to work with it. And the reason there's ways to work with it is because it's not set in any particular way, in a certain way. Like last night Elaine was talking about this too. It's empty of having to work in one particular time. Like, I plant this seed, for sure it's going to ripen in 100 years. That sort of thing. So even that law is empty. That's why there's three different options. This life, next life, anytime after that. So empty in that sense just means it's not set in any particular way. We are talking about the laws of karma, but even those are not set for sure. So there's wiggle room, like seeds that we plant, we can purify those seeds. And do you guys know who Winston McCullough is? I think he's going to come. Yeah. He's taught before, and we've gone on retreats with him and that sort of thing. But I think it was him who said that to study Buddhism, you have to have a very high tolerance for paradox. And I think that's really, really true. Because a lot of times things are this way, and they're this way, and they're that way, and they're this way. And then the more we get comfortable with the teachings and the scriptures, it makes more sense. And at first, it's like, you said it was this way, and now you're saying it was this way. I went through this for years, especially with teachings on emptiness. And it was really frustrating for me. And then I realized it is actually all those ways. It's all those different ways that the teachers are describing. Anyways. The nature of samsaric karma, which is, I don't know about all of you, I know for me, I am in samsara. You might all be enlightened, or I have no idea because I can't see. And each of us has no idea about the others. So I have no idea about all of you. Lauren has no idea about the rest of us. We don't know because we can't read each other's minds. You know, unless we can, and then but I know I can't. So the nature of samsaric karma is that it wears out. Our karma for this life starts to wear out the minute we're born. It's wearing out as we speak. And all of us are getting closer and closer to our death in this life. It's just how it goes. And as long as the seeds that we plant are made in ignorance or not dedicated. So for dedicating, it would be like as we're doing every single thing that we do, as we're doing it, we could be dedicating, I dedicate the merit of doing this to reaching full Buddhahood so I can help all beings do the same in this lifetime. In theory, it'd be possible to dedicate everything. But, you know, we start out with the good deeds that we're doing, the big good deeds, and then we start adding on as we can. If we start to try to do it all the time, it's way too much. But by dedicating, then that sends whatever we're doing, the power of that seed, it sends it to our enlightenment. So instead of it just being wasted or fizzled out, by dedicating, we're turning our world. We're slowly changing it around. By dedicating, you know, at least maybe coming to class. Anytime we meditate or study or do something kind for someone or have a nice thought about someone else or ourselves, every time we maybe give someone a gift or let someone go in traffic, that sort of thing, which is what starts to turn our whole world into more of a miraculous world, more of a special magical place. And it is that just as much as it is, just Sacramento. It has equal potential to be both. It can be a magical place. It can be someplace that we hate living. It can be either. And in a sense, it's our decision what we make it. In the present, things come up that are forced on us by our past karmic seeds, but we do have free will. We have the room to decide what we're going to do now. And it's the act, in a way, of like faking it till you make it. Starting to work against those strong negativities that are coming up from the past and planting some positive seeds instead. Like, okay, I see this is coming up and I understand how it's working and I know what I need to do now is not plant that same seed again. I see this person maybe yelling at me. I want to yell back, but I don't like having a person who's yelling at me in my life, so I'm not going to. That one's really hard. I'm not going to yell back because I don't want to plant the same seeds. And on top of that, it feels crappy to yell back in the moment. It usually makes the situation worse and upsets the other person more, and it's planting a negative seed. So it's not just that we're planting a negative seed. It's that it sucks all around. And then usually, not usually, but the good seeds we plant that are more enjoyable for us, as in, the not yelling isn't as enjoyable, but it's very powerful. But the seeds that are more enjoyable, like buying someone a gift that we really like, or hanging out with a friend, or, hi Belinda, or those sorts of things, those are planting a good seed, and they feel good in the moment for us, and it seems like the other person's enjoying it. So there's all those things happening. It's not just that it's planting a good seed. It's also fun, and it's bringing some happiness to the other person now, and it's going to bring happiness to me and other people in the future. Okay, so when we dedicate to the ultimate goal, which is Buddhahood, then the seed that we're planting doesn't go to some temporary result that's just going to fizzle out. Like we're giving ice cream and then we get a lot of good ice cream for a year or something. And who really cares? It's nice, but it's not freedom from suffering forever. Okay, so the goal is that we should reach some kind of permanent happiness. Otherwise, it's just another type of suffering. Not suffering as in everything's crappy, but suffering as in it doesn't have the answer that we're looking for. It's not ultimate happiness. It's not freedom from our jealousy and our pride, our anger, our sadness, that sort of thing. It doesn't mean that it completely is crappy in the moment. But until it's the ultimate happiness, there's always some unhappiness or some dissatisfaction mixed into everything. There might be some goodness in there too, but it's all tainted. It's all dirty in some way. And the good thing is that although no negative deed is lost, no goodness that we do is ever lost. As we see ourselves doing good, it plants a good seed in our mind. So just as we've done countless bad deeds, we've done countless good things as well. And that's where the practice and the balance of purification, because we can purify all those negatives, and rejoicing, we can grow all the good. So that's how we can start to clean everything out. So we're cleaning out the negative, we're rejoicing in the good, and we're doing good going forward. And then we start to get this momentum to where at some point we'll have the seeds that are going to force us to see emptiness directly. Not like we're not going to want to, but we're not going to have, it's not like we're going to be choosing in the moment or trying really hard. It's going to be that those seeds are coming, and that's what we have to see, is ultimate reality, how everything's truly working, and then we're on our way out after that. So we're on like the conveyor belt out of samsara, out of suffering, because we've seen how the world really works. All right, that was the definition of virtue. Let's do the next one. We'll take a break in a few minutes. I thought of this because this is what we're like. We plant a seed in the past, and then it comes up, and we're like, I don't like this. I don't want it. Like, just like this poor little baby. He thinks, oh, my gosh, my terrible mom, it looks like, is feeding me this crappy food or whatever. Or it's too hot or whatever. And it's from past karmic seeds. The same food could be enjoyable if we had the right seeds. Okay, say namen.
Namen.
Yidu mi ongwa.
Midewa.
Nongwa. Nimigewa. This almost sounds like a different language to me, this one.
Different than Tibetan, you mean?
Yeah. Let's say it one more time. Say namen.
Namen.
Yidu mi ongwa.
Yidu mi ongwa.
Midewa nongwa.
Midewa nongwa.
Nimigewa. Namen is karmic result. Yirumi ongwa is undesirable. Midewa, unpleasant. Nongwa, experience. Ni is that, and migewa is bad deed. Okay, Tibetan, you translate from the back forward. The end is the first word, or the first idea. Who wants to try?
Bad deeds or the karmic? No. Bad deeds result in undesirable and unpleasant experiences.
Yep, pretty much. A bad deed or non-virtue is that which brings you a karmic result, which is an undesirable, unpleasant experience. So that's the definition of non-virtue or bad deed. Definition of virtue or a good deed is it's something that brings us a desirable, pleasurable result. Basically, these are just saying, if you hurt other people, you're going to bring hurt on yourself. If you do goodness, you'll get goodness. In that sense, it's very clean, very, very clear cut. The reason to be moral in the most basic way is for our own self-interest. And then, so we're not in, we're in the Vaibhashika school now, but we could say the reason to be moral is so that we can reach happiness and be able to bring all others there too. So it's in our own self-interest, and then in that way, in the self-interest, not the self-interest, but in the interest of others. And in another way, there's there's no other being involved in the seeds that we're planting. We can't blame anybody else for anything. If we choose, if we practice karma, we decide this is what we believe, how the world works, it makes a lot of sense, and we decide to go with it, there's no one else to blame. It's all on us. And in that way, we're also empowered. We also have the power to change everything. And only we have the power to change everything. So we decide what we want, and then that's what we get in our lives. And mostly we can't see the karmic correlation. We can't see why things are happening or what seed I planted to bring this about. It would be Belinda or Lauren. Do you guys remember what level of reality is karma?
Deeply.
Mm-hmm. And what was the Tibetan?
Shintakokyur.
Yep. So Shintakokyur, or deeply hidden, which means that only a Buddha sees the inner workings of karma. Only an enlightened being. And emptiness is what level?
Hidden.
Or?
Kokyur.
Mm-hmm. So emptiness is easier to see than karma. Basically, we can only see karmic correlations based on authority. And that means that we have to establish the authority. So if we decide that we hold the Buddha as an authority, as someone that we trust and has spoken the truth about a lot of other things, then we can start to think, okay, he was right about a lot of things. He's explained my life perfectly. He's explained all of these things that make a lot of sense and seem to work. So I can't really see why things are happening, but this is what he's taught. And because all these other things I trust, I think maybe I can trust him on this too. That's how we use authority, which we all know. We do that in our lives. We have people who we trust, and then they say something that we're not sure about, but they've always been right in the past, so we believe them. It's the same thing with this. So right now we can't see how killing spiders in our house is going to lead to our own pain, but a Buddha does see that. And we're going to go through the 10 non-virtues in a little bit. So if we want to know what is virtue and non-virtue, we have to study what the Buddha said. It's the only way to know what we should and shouldn't do. Which, it does make sense, because it's very confusing what to do and not to do, especially when we're starting to study Buddhism, or even when we've been studying a long time. It can still be very confusing. And that's only, the shouldn't and should do is only based on what we want in our life and what we don't want. It's not someone else saying you shouldn't do this or you're bad or something like that. That's not the idea. And then it can be a little difficult, because in our lives, we're used to picking and choosing what we like, we take and we do, and what we don't like, we just decide is wrong and we discard. And in a spiritual practice, it's different. Whatever spiritual practice or religion you decide that you want to go with, it'll be detrimental for your own spiritual progress to pick and choose what you want and what you don't want, especially from many different religions or spiritual paths. That'll just get really confusing. And each path on its own, at least each of the major world religions, is a full path in itself. They're not meant to be mixed and matched. Each of them are a full path, and everything is important and necessary. And that doesn't mean that we take everything at once. But when things come up that we don't agree with or we can't handle right now, we just say, okay, I'm going to shelve this. I'll come back to it at another point. It doesn't make sense to me right now. But based on what I do know about these teachings, about the Buddha, about Jesus, whoever it is, I can trust that they might know more than I do, at least about this particular situation, and I'll come back to it later. So not just discarding things and saying, yeah, I practice this, but I don't agree with this part, and so I'm not going to do it. As opposed to, I'm comfortable with this right now, and this is pushing me to my edge. This over here, that's too much right now, but I'm open to the idea. It might be true. I just can't see it yet. And that's with, well, with our practice, we have to be spiritual adults. We can think if we lie and we get money from that, then that's the cause of the money, but it's not. The cause of the money is generosity in the past. If we lie and we get a raise or something like that, we just planted some ugliness for the future. It's not that the raise came from that. If we were going to get the raise, we would have gotten the raise no matter what. Which is hard because we've already lied, so we can't test it out. We've already lied and then the raise came. But it wasn't the cause. Nothing good comes from something bad. Nothing bad comes from something good. It just doesn't work that way. Which makes a lot more sense than just thinking that some people do crappy things and all these great things happen, and then some people do really good things and all this crap happens. Because that just makes no sense. That's really just a random... That just is random if we look at it that way. Okay. Let me see how much we have left of this. Okay, we'll go through this real quick, then we'll take a break. It's really, in my experience, even after studying this for years, it's really hard for this to sink in. The idea that when, say we think we've done something wrong and we lie to cover it up, and the other person says, oh, that's okay, no problem. Them saying that's okay, no problem, didn't come from us lying. It came from a past seed. Us lying is only planting a seed to have other people lie to us in the future, to be around people who aren't trustworthy. It didn't bring the other person being forgiving and relaxed about the situation. It's really hard to learn, in my experience at least. The only reason they believe us in the present is because we didn't lie in the past. And in the present, by lying, we're planting a negative seed for our future. For our future. It's not for somebody else. It's for us. And how can we tell actually the frustrating thing too, so we lie in that situation and then what happens in the future, we could be telling the truth and nobody will believe us anyways. Something like that will come up and it's because we lied in the past. But in that moment, we thought, oh, I'm going to lie to try to get out of this. The only reason we got out of it is because of something we did before that. And then in the future, it'll come up as some situation where no one listens to us or we're saying something that is really true. People think we're lying. People around us lie to us, that sort of thing. And it is... So, it is true that only good things come from good seeds, bad things come from bad seeds. And how can we prove this? How can we prove it to ourselves? And the way that I can see that we can prove it easiest, this is what Geshe Michael talks about in class too, is that the reason things are confusing is because we're looking at them the wrong way. It seems like we lie sometimes and we get what we want. We tell the truth sometimes, we don't get what we want. We lie another time, we don't get what we want. We tell the truth, we get what we want. Everything's jumbled because we're looking at it in the wrong way. We're looking at it in an ignorant way. So if me lying and the other person saying it's okay, if the lie was the cause of that, it would happen every single time I lied. Every single time I lied, I would get off the hook. Every time. There would never be a time where I would get caught. There would never be a time where the person didn't even notice. There would never be any other outcome. So the way things work are very clear if we know the rules, which is what we're learning here. So a lie can only bring a negativity. Can only bring negativity in the future. If I lie and in the present someone is forgiving and okay and says, oh, no problem, that did not come from the lie, it could never come from the lie. If it did, it would always come when we lied. Every single time I lied, I would be forgiven. Every single time the situation would work out the way I want it to. And that's the main proof for it. And how we can start to look at it, because it doesn't make any sense. If we choose karma as our worldview, that means that things are caused. Everything has a cause. And like causes like. We'll get into the rules of karma or the laws of karma later. So if we lie and we're forgiven, that did not come from the lie. If we do something underhanded to hurt a friend of ours or someone at work, it's a promotion, we don't like it, something like that. If we do something to hurt someone and I don't know if that example makes much sense. If we do something negative and we get a positive, it didn't come from the negative, basically. So if I say, if I talk badly about one of my coworkers to our manager, if I tell them something negative that my coworker did, and then I end up getting promoted, I didn't get promoted because of the negativity that I did. I got promoted because of something I did in the past, some goodness. I helped someone find a job. I helped someone succeed. I was happy for someone's success. It didn't come from me talking badly about the coworker, but it does look like it. But then sometimes I talk badly about a coworker and nothing happens. Sometimes I talk badly about a coworker and maybe the manager says, you know, like, we don't gossip in this workplace. I wish you wouldn't talk badly about your coworkers. So it's just a crapshoot if we're looking at it that way. It doesn't make any sense. It's just like, whatever. I do whatever and whatever comes up. As opposed to very clearly, I do a good deed will come back. In that sense, it clears things up a lot because we don't have to decide, at least between should I be nice right now or should I gossip about somebody. We don't have, it takes a decision out of that because we know if we want goodness in the future, we're going to do the good thing. All the time. There's no question in that way. Now we have to decide what good thing we're going to do, and that's where it gets confusing still, but at least we've narrowed it down more. Okay, let's see. Okay. I think that's good for now. We'll take a break and then we'll come back. Okay.